Welcome to some amazing discussions from the voices of young America. Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. In the next hour, you'll hear from leading women in academics, business, entertainment, and more. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe. We are so glad to welcome our guest today, Tamar Danikian, who is absolutely helping entrepreneurs and small business owners get the resources that they need to be successful. So once again, we'd like to welcome Tamar to the show. How are you doing today?
Well, thank you.
Great to hear. And the first thing I'd like to talk to you about is about how you got your start in law.
Sure. I guess it's a story that starts when I was 10. One of my cousins that I really looked up to was going to law school, and I made my decision then that I wanted to pursue it. And it's, you know, something that stuck with me throughout school and college, and I decided after I finished with college to take 2.5 years and to actually work in the legal profession. And I worked as a legal assistant in a large New York City firm. And it really helped me decide exactly which branch of the law I would want to pursue. And after I was done with that, I went to law school.
Perfect. And when you just mentioned what type of branch of law that you wanted to pursue, what branch did you feel like you were most passionate about?
Well, it's litigation, going to court was something that I did not think that I was well suited for. So for me, I decided right away that I wanted to do a transactional practice, which means basically helping parties get to the end goal that they both have in mind, to basically act as an intermediary and to, of course, representing one party, to help them get business transactions completed.
Awesome. And, you know, we've talked to many entrepreneurs on the show, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, too, is many times they start a business and they don't necessarily have the background in business or background into different laws and rules that they have to abide by. And so to be able to have that type of expertise, I'm sure, is extremely helpful to them to be successful, correct?
I think so. It's really yes and no. In some ways, it's really an on-the-job type of learning. And when you're learning on the job, it really becomes a lot more meaningful and effective. You know, and this is the same thing as, you know, going to law school versus practicing law. It's easy to, you know, take a look at the rule books, at the law books, and try to figure out, okay, this is what the law is. But when you're trying to actually put it into practice, it basically brings it alive. And it's the same thing with a business owner. That, you know, whereas they may, you know, want to sit down and understand what the basic framework, for example, of a food business might be, when you're actually in the process of preparing the paperwork and going through the steps of getting the licenses and the permits that you need, that those rules really become a lot more effective and meaningful.
Awesome. Also, when you were going into law and you went to law school, I'm sure you perceived this. I actually found a statistic that said that just a little bit more than a third of lawyers are females. And I was wondering if this inequality has affected you at all, or what you think of the inequality and really the true lack of females that are trying to pursue a career in law.
Mm-hmm. Well, New York City has a very large legal market. And practicing in New York City, you come across a lot of talented women in both transactional and in litigation practice. Overall, though, when I am doing transactions and representing clients, I have found that most of the businesses that I represent are led by men. And the lawyers that I am transacting with tend more likely than not to be men. The few women that I have encountered in transactional practices, each of them has actually made a significant impact on me, I think. And to the extent also that they have been more senior when I've come across them, I've learned so much from them in terms of demeanor, methods of practice, negotiation tactics, and things like that. So Although they've been far and few between at times, they've been tremendously helpful.
Great, great. And what is your role at Elinoff Grossman & Scholl? That is the firm that you are working for, correct?
It is, yes. I am a partner in the firm, in the corporate and securities department.
Great. And who do you work with? What are your clients in your job?
Well, we do not focus on any particular industry, so we represent clients that do many, many different things, and we tend to focus on smaller and mid-sized companies. We represent many entrepreneurs, individuals that are getting a start in business, into helping them organize their business and, you know, start getting seed capital, the initial rounds of financing that they need. And we also represent companies in their entire life cycle as they go on, from these initial beginnings to going public events or acquisition events. And then also, once they are public companies, ongoing representation of them as public companies.
Great. And like you mentioned, you kind of help these companies along their way, often in the beginning when they need some help, like you said, getting some funding and things like that. So what do you perceive to be the change in these entrepreneurs and in the companies that they lead from the beginning to when you work with them to maybe the end when you're finishing up the job?
Well, as a lawyer, you hope never to finish the job. It's always fantastic to grow with the clients as you go. What is really fantastic to see is the growth of a company or an entrepreneur in their life cycle. So as their needs grow, as they grow their business, they're coming to you with different issues and different problems for you to solve. And as a lawyer, too, you get to grow with your clients and to learn even more about their businesses, about, you know, finding creative ways to help them with their business issues sometimes, because, you know, more often than not, you're never going to find a black and white situation where it's just very simple to get through something.
Right. I must imagine it must be very interesting to get to know so many different businesses and these entrepreneurs that are so passionate about their projects and what they're doing, and they must be extremely different, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's funny because you, as you represent a client, you become, never an expert, but you become a lot more knowledgeable about their industry as well. So, for example, one of the clients I represent is a pharmaceutical company, and I've learned so much in talking to them and in helping them with their various transactions and their reporting requirements about the rules and the laws that they're subject to and about the processes that they need to go through on any given day. Same thing with, you know, a technology company. You come across the same issues that they're dealing with, and you learn to help them basically come up with solutions that are going to make sure that they're compliant with the rules and regulations that are subject to them, and also to, you know, get their transactions done at the same time. But it's a fantastic journey, just learning more and more about different industries as you go.
Absolutely. And the entrepreneurs that you work with and the small business owners, like you said before, they tend to be male. And I was wondering, what differences do you see between the female entrepreneurs and small business owners with the male small business owners and entrepreneurs?
You know, it's hard to characterize all women across the board, of course. But in my experience with the entrepreneurs that we've dealt with, and the ones that have female executives or female directors, the process that the company goes through is very thoughtful and very focused on the details and making sure that they understand what each path will lead them to. So I've just always been very excited to have that connection also with the women executives as they go through their process of analyzing the problem at hand.
Perfect. And when we get back from our first break, we are going to continue this conversation talking about the differences between female entrepreneurs and male entrepreneurs, as well as your work in helping those entrepreneurs achieve success. But once again, we are going to go to a break. Remember, to all of our listeners, we want to hear from you. Go to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, use the hashtag womeninvest, hashtag girlsinvest, or hashtag investinwomen. Stay tuned.
Join Kid Chef Eliana for Cool Kids Cook. Eliana is one of the youngest published cookbook authors and will show you that there are all kinds of goodness in food, beyond the chicken nuggets and fries. On our show, we'll discover cuisine from around the world, learn some great cooking techniques, speak with some of the world's top chefs, and share recipes. Kid Chef Eliana is here for you on Cool Kids Cook every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Bon appetit!
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
Join us every week for the Paper Hope Street Team. None of our topics are off the table. This is a program that you can listen to and discuss with your family. From the pages of the Paper Hope blog to the internet radio airwaves, we'll talk about the topics you want to talk about, such as friendship and relationships, or some more controversial issues about sex, drugs, and underage drinking. Join the Paper Hope Street Team live every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Kids channel. Let's talk soon.
You're listening to Voice America Kids. Real kids, real talk.
You are
radio.
Listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at hashtag Women Invest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I'm your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to continue our conversation with our guest today, Tamar Danikian. And before we got to the break, we talked a little bit about Tamar's background in law and the types of people that she helps small business owners and entrepreneurs achieve success. And Tamar, I'd love to continue the conversation now, heading right back into the topic. And I'd like to know from you if you see any specific trends in the types of businesses that you work with.
You mean in terms of the types of businesses that that entrepreneurs are focused on at the moment?
Yes.
Well, it's, you know, an individual that's passionate about what they're doing will find success regardless of the field that they're in. What I have found over time is that the executives and the business owners that are truly putting their heart and soul into their business, and you can see that every day, those are the people that more likely than not will be successful. And that's not limited to any industry, really. It's just, it's a very individual drive that determines whether or not the person's going to be successful in business.
Great. And, you know, we've talked to, like I mentioned before, so many different entrepreneurs, and it almost seems that there is this entrepreneurial boom. And many people are finding mm-hmm. that maybe they aren't interested or not very much cut out for these corporate jobs, and they are now starting their own businesses and following their dreams. And have you noticed that also as somebody who works with those types of businesses?
You know, I have to say it may be a difference in age. I've noticed that particularly with millennials. In New York, there is a very vibrant community of entrepreneurial folks, people that are really seeking to connect with others that also have this drive to start their own business. And I've noted that a lot of the individuals that fit into this millennial age group are very determined to find their own path. And it's very interesting because, you know, looking back a few generations, the idea was to find a company that you would stay with for your entire career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's quite similar even for me, you know, when I graduated law school, which was about 10 years ago, the idea was to find a large firm that you would stay at and, you know, never leave. But you see a lot more flexibility and a lot more dynamism, in essence, in the way that people are deciding to pursue their goals.
Absolutely. And when it comes to access to capital, this is definitely something that's on the minds of many business owners, is how can they get the money that they need to fund their passion? Like we said, their passion to start their companies. And how do you mm-hmm. believe that the accessibility of capital has changed over the years, and especially for women?
Mm-hmm. This is something that my firm has been involved with now for over 2 years since the passage of the Jobs Act, is the crowdfunding industry. And when the rules were first passed, obviously it was a very radical change in the way that the rules would govern how money was raised by private companies. And, you know, obviously for that reason, that there's been a lot of maybe hesitation or reluctance, and certainly a very long time in getting the rules passed that would allow true equity crowdfunding in this country. However, there are forms that are available right now, specifically for accredited investor equity crowdfunding. It's something that's going on right now. And accredited investors are, in essence, investors that need certain sophistication and wealth requirements or income requirements, basically to ensure that to the extent that they lose their investment entirely, it is not going to substantially impact their well-being.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that level of crowdfunding that is going on right now. And it's very interesting. What we've noticed with respect to our own clients and just generally trends over time, is that women are getting more funding through equity crowdfunding than they have traditionally with venture round financing. Now, you know, there's a lot of statistics out there with respect to exactly what percentage of venture money women-led businesses have gotten historically, and it tends to be very low.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the statistics point to less than 10% of all venture capital goes to women. And what we've seen is a substantial uptick in that number. Up to 45% of women that are getting funded on equity crowdfunding sites or even peer-to-peer lending are now women.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, whereas women-led businesses historically have maybe not sought capital to help them grow their business, this is a very impactful opportunity for them to seek that capital.
Right. And like you said, the success rates are growing. But do you believe that women are still taking enough initiative to seek capital for their businesses, or do we still have a ways to go?
Because there's been a long lag time in the passage of regulations with respect to equity crowdfunding since the Jobs Act was passed, that, you know, obviously we're not seeing as much momentum as we would like. However, in going out and meeting entrepreneurs in New York especially, I have noticed that people are aware of what crowdfunding is, and they're taking advantage of it. And not only equity crowdfunding, where you are selling an equity interest, basically a share of your company to someone else, but we also see people taking advantage of reward or donation-based crowdfunding. So these mm-hmm. are the types of campaigns that you may have on an Indiegogo or Kickstarter, or, you know, the women-focused crowdfunding site, which is Plum Alley. And on these sites, you see people, entrepreneurs, offering either a reward or they're asking for a donation. And in that sense, they're taking advantage of putting their products or their ideas out into the crowd very early on in the process to determine exactly what kind of market traction they may have.
Right. And I love that you mentioned that. We actually interviewed the owner of Plum Alley, and as well as Candace Klein, who has had a role in helping to create the Jobs Act. And just for a refresher for our audience, I know we talked about it just a little bit before, but just for a little bit of a review, do you mind explaining exactly what the Jobs Act does and how it changes your work?
Well, it's at the heart of it, the securities laws in this country always divided a public offering from a private offering. And when you had a public, when you have a public offering, there are substantial disclosure requirements on the company, and it can be very onerous and time-consuming, and can take, you know, anywhere up to a year to actually go public. Whereas when you are in the private realm, the rules are a bit more relaxed because the assumption is that the investors that are investing in your company are these sophisticated, accredited investors, that they have some sort of additional either sophistication, knowledge, ability with respect to actually looking at investments and understanding whether or not they're good or bad for themselves. And in that realm, the rules have been substantially more relaxed versus a public offering. What the Jobs Act at heart does is it turns this private realm of financing into a form of public financing so that those people that would never have had access to private investments in companies, your everyday regular person is supposed to, within certain limits, be able to invest directly in these private companies. So, for example, there might be a brand of a cereal bar or something like that that you really truly enjoy. And this person, the owner of this company, will put up a crowdfunding site and say to his or her customers, I'd like to raise some money so I can grow my business. The idea is that the Jobs Act would eventually create platforms where every customer, whether or not they are an accredited investor, would be able to invest in that company.
Perfect. Thank you so much for providing that clarification. And now, how is your firm getting involved in crowdfunding?
Well, one of my partners, Doug Elinoff, has spent substantial amounts of time discussing the implementation of the Jobs Act with the SEC directly, with FINRA, and with international communities as well. And so it's, you know, like I said, because it is so substantially changing the ways that we've always thought about public and private offerings, there really is a lot of nuance to go through and to parse out and to figure out the regulations. And so, you know, we see this as a very, very positive change in terms of allowing small businesses to gain access to capital. And it's very worthwhile for us to take the time to assist them in any way that we can in terms of creating and helping shape the regulations in this area.
Okay, that is great, great things to hear. And we are so glad that your firm is able to contribute to that movement. We are going to take another break. Remember, we do want to hear from you. Go to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, use the hashtag girlsinvest, hashtag investinwomen, and hashtag womeninvest. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to explore the amazing world under the sea? Your host is a certified scuba diver, explorer. He likes to cook, and most of all, he's just a kid like you. you'll find out a lot more lies under the sea than what you've seen on TV, in movies, and even in aquatic parks. You'll learn about all kinds of fish, as well as other sea creatures. We'll take you to some exotic destinations and so much more. There's a whole big world under sea just waiting to be discovered. Tune in to Under the Sea, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Voice America Kids.
Sometimes we may sound strange, but remember, we're just kids with opinions. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
There's so much going on in the tech field. The tech team is here to sort it all out so that you know exactly what you need to get and what you should avoid. In this age of cell phones and text messaging and new discoveries every single day, you need to be informed. We'll bring you previews of new products, technology news, and help you make the right decision when you are out there buying that new MP3 player, cell phone, or mobile device. Don't do a thing until you've tuned in to the Tech Team, Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Kids.
Looking for an on-air community where teens talk and the world listens? Tune in to Express Yourself, an entertaining adolescent fusion radio program where passion and possibility populate the airwaves. Our vivacious teen hosts and star-studded field reporters from around the country offer stimulating segments and invigorating viewpoints connecting with the world campus of young people. We'll talk with cool celebrities, exhilarating experts, and tenacious teens with experience. Tuesdays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, on Voice America Kids. Express yourself. What do you want to do? Are you interested in the performing arts? If so, make sure you tune in to the Angel and Harmony Show. Angel and Harmony have experience singing, acting, and performing in general, and want to help you live out your dreams of the future. Whether you are interested in acting, modeling, dancing, or singing, this is the show for you. We'll even give you the scoop on being behind the scenes if you're a little shy. The Angel and Harmony Show is heard live every Thursday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel.
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
What's cooking? Join Kid Chef Eliana for Cool Kids Cook. Eliana is one of the youngest published cookbook authors and will show you that there are all kinds of goodness in food, beyond the chicken nuggets and fries. On our show, we'll discover cuisine from around the world, learn some great cooking techniques, speak with some of the world's top chefs, and share recipes. Kid Chef Eliana is here for you on Cool Kids Cook every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Kids channel. Bon appetit!
Keep it right here. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at hashtag Women Invest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I am your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to go ahead and get back to the conversation with our guest today, Tamar Danikian. And before we went to the break, we talked a little bit about how her firm is getting involved in crowdfunding and the importance of crowdfunding has on entrepreneurs and small business owners. And Tamar, now that we've learned that your firm is making these movements to help female entrepreneurs and to bring about crowdfunding and different trends in funding as well, I'd love to know, what do you believe makes your firm so unique?
Well, we're actually quite entrepreneurial in spirit ourselves. When I first joined the firm about 8 years ago, there were about 25 of us. And this was in 2006. And since then, you know, we obviously have had to deal with the financial crisis in 2008. And we saw a lot of law firms, major national, international law firms, collapse during that period. And since I joined, our firm has actually increased substantially. Now we have a little over, I think, 65 lawyers total. And the reason that we really have been able to weather the storm and to increase our size is because we are entrepreneurs at heart ourselves. We understand what it means to make sure that your business is going to survive. And that means that we're focused on providing services at a very cost-effective rate, substantially less in many cases than our, you know, very large competitors in New York City, but with the same level of sophistication. And, you know, when you hear about the rates that some lawyers will charge in New York City, many companies just cannot afford them anymore. And, you know, for us, we don't think that you need to be charging $1,000 an hour to be able to, you know, substantiate and to support a very sophisticated practice. And so we've always been focused on making sure that our services are accessible to the small and mid-sized companies that we aim to represent.
Perfect. And this job sounds very exciting, especially like you mentioned, the entrepreneurial spirit within the company and then dealing with entrepreneurs as well. And what do you believe is the most fulfilling and exciting aspect of what you do?
You know, I have to tell you, I love practicing the law. And you don't hear that many lawyers say that, unfortunately. But when you know that the work that you're doing for a client is going to make a major difference in their life course, that the transactions that you're helping them out with are going to decide exactly what happens to the company, it just makes it very different than when you are, you know, sitting in a room, unfortunately surrounded with dozens and dozens of boxes of information that you just need to go through. Mm-hmm. It's just the difference between a small company and everything in the life cycle of that company making a difference, and you get to participate.
Great. And your job truly encompasses investing in women, and the show being called Women Investing in Women and Girls, and then the initiative Women Investing in Women, we've come to realize that investment means something more than just financial. And we'd love to know what you believe it truly means to invest in a woman and to invest in a girl.
Mm-hmm. Well, I happen to have two girls myself, and they're still quite young, 6 and 4, but this is actually a question that I personally struggle with every single day. And, you know, I try to take the lessons that I learn from the business folks that I encounter every single day. And I look at, you know, what is it about their character that sets them up for success? And it's the positive attitude in essence, you know. And this is something that I was thinking about recently, is that, you know, there's so much that a girl finds to be negative in her atmosphere. There's always, you know, you can't do this, you shouldn't be doing that, you don't do that. And my focus is really changing that into a positive message instead, and to, you know, help them decide, well, maybe, you know, this is a better course rather than that, and helping them understand how to negotiate, you know, the decisions that they need to make.
Awesome. I believe that you coined this term before, a don't culture, correct?
Yes.
I think that that's a great way to label it, and it's exactly what you were saying before, how there are many voices in society saying, don't do this, don't do that, and like you said, trying to redirect that energy and try to be making it more constructive and just more than just putting somebody down for something that may be out of their control. And I'd like to know, how do you believe that this culture is affecting us right now and affecting the progress that we are making as a country and then more widely as a society?
Well, you know, my background before I got to law school was in anthropology. And, you know, in a lot of the studies all across the world, you know that the family is really the building block of society. And in many cultures, women tend to be the focal point of the family as well. And when you change the message for women as they become, you know, the centralized focus of their families, when you change that message from a negative message to a positive message, that positive energy, I think, is then outward looking as well. And it changes the entire atmosphere, I think, rather than having a woman be focused on all of the things that she is not supposed to be doing, cannot be doing, rather than and changing that into the things that she is doing, that and giving even that, whatever it is that she is doing, a positive spin. I think it's just a complete change in the way that you look at whatever it might be. And it's not a matter of, you know, you have to completely change what a woman does. You just change the way that you look at whatever it is that you're doing. So that rather than saying, for example, you know, a woman should be at home, and a woman that there's a difference between a mom that works versus a mom that doesn't. Absolutely not. The way that you look at it instead is that whether you work or not, the impact that the mom, for example, has in the house can change the way that all of our kids interact with the world. And when you say, I am making a positive impact on my kids' lives, whether I work or not, it just changes the way that you look at the world.
Awesome. And with that being said, to go along with that, like you mentioned before, you are a mother of two girls, and this problem that we face, this don't culture, it expands past a nation, expands past a society. It's something that many nations face across the world, if not all of them. And I'd like to know how you believe that you can help your daughters not become discouraged by this trend in society, this unfortunate trend.
Well, it's, you know, I try to help them focus on things that they may have otherwise turned away from. So, you know, for them being so young, this is, you know, I've read a lot about when they get to the age of 7 or 8, they turn away from being curious about science or math or engineering. And so for me personally, I make sure that my daughters have access to those types of activities. And, you know, that they're focusing on building those abilities as well. I've noticed, for example, in one of my daughters that she's extremely proficient in math. And so I make sure to encourage that and to keep her going in that. One of my other daughters loves to build things. And so, you know, we encourage her to use her Legos to build, you know, whatever it is that she's thinking of. And, to, you know, to build forts and whatever it is. So that rather than focus on, you know, what may be a girl thing to do or a boy thing to do, just to make sure that we are focusing on what their obvious passions are and to drive them to continue to learn about that.
You know, I love how you mentioned that. I actually have a twin brother, and he was very much into the engineering aspects, and he played with Legos. Because I was his twin, I would play with Legos too, so I absolutely understand the influence that those types of things can have from a young age and how that can really cultivate your interests and all of that stuff. So I can definitely understand that. Yeah, definitely. And I believe that it's a great thing that we're able to expose these girls from a young age and recognize that there are those trends and to recognize that age and then to try to change that. And those are absolutely the steps that we can try to take to change that don't culture into a do culture. And with that, we are going to go to another break. Let us know what you think about the don't culture. Go to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter, use #girlsinvest, #womeninvest, and #investinwomen. We'll be right back.
What about the world concerns you? Is it future success? Is it world issues? Are you just looking to change the world in general? Tune in to What Up World. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, or what you look like. Everyone is entitled to the same chance for success. Follow your dreams. Move forward. Make a difference. Tune in to What Up World every Friday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Kids channel.
We don't care how you got here. We're just glad you showed up. You're listening to Voice America Kids.
You're listening to Voice America Kids. Real kids, real talk radio.
You are listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Be sure to join in the discussion by tweeting us at #WomenInvest or on Facebook at Women Investing in Women. We want to hear what you have to say. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Women Investing in Women and Girls. I am your host, Michelle Jaffe, and we are going to finish up our conversation with our guest today, Tamar Danikian. And Tamar, how do you measure success in your life, whether it be through your work at Elinoff Grossman and Scholl or in family life? Like you mentioned, you have two daughters. So how do you measure your own success?
Well, that's I think that's something that changes over time. When you, personally for me, when I find that I am being pulled in too many different directions, which happens quite often, that regardless of what I may be accomplishing, that I'm not successful in the sense that I'm not doing what's bringing me happiness as well. And obviously finding that balance, and everyone, of course, talks about balance all the time between work and life and whatever else it might be, that's a constant struggle. It's not something that you can just decide to do. It's an ongoing process, and literally every single day you have to judge whether or not you've been successful in making sure that you've accomplished for yourself and for your family and for your work environment what you think personally is going to be a measure of success. And it's very fluid.
Perfect. And with that being said, what do you believe has been your greatest success?
My greatest success has been choosing something that is not the beaten path. When I graduated from law school, I decided not to join a large New York City firm, and instead to find a place where I would be at home practicing law. And my focus from the beginning was to find a boutique firm, a smaller firm to practice in. Of course, now my firm, Elinoff Grossman, has really changed into a mid-sized firm, but it still has a feeling of individualized connections with clients and focusing on making sure that the personal connection that exists between the lawyer and the client is actually helping to build the relationship, to understand, and to help the businesses grow as they go. So, many people thought I was crazy not to choose the protection, the safety, the support of a large law firm. But I knew that for what I wanted to do, which is to really connect with clients, that I needed to find a smaller place. And, this many years into practice, I still really can say that I love the practice of law. And I found that not everyone is able to do that. And for me personally, that's been a great measure of success.
Love it. And on the flip side of that, what do you believe has been the greatest setback or possibly the greatest challenge? You know, a career in law is not an easy thing to have, and especially in a city like New York City, is definitely not very simple. So what has been the biggest challenge or setback that you have experienced in your career? But then how did you recover from that as well?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily a setback, but there are certain constant challenges. And, you know, it's when you are a younger attorney and, you know, having practiced for only 10 years, still makes you a relatively young attorney, that's always a challenge that you, in many ways, you have to prove yourself, in essence, and to demonstrate to the people that you're working with on the other side, the other, you know, individuals that your clients are doing business with, that you are at their same sophistication, regardless of age. And the other thing also is you really have to develop a thick skin practicing law. And that is truly an ongoing kind of process. But every type of situation that you come across will teach you something else. And, you know, when you step back and you reflect on, you know, the circumstances, the situations, the negotiations and processes that you've gone through, and you make sure that you are actually incorporating that back into the way that you work, I find that it just makes a major difference.
Right. And I mean, to say that 10 years as an attorney is relatively young, it's quite funny. What do you believe is something that maybe before those 10 years you wish somebody told you about the law field and having a job in law that you didn't know before?
Mm-hmm. When you go to law school, you really don't learn how to practice law. And, you know, I actually love that I had a background in anthropology, because being a lawyer is the main part of it is really being a counselor. That really is the heart of your job. And it's about learning about people and about managing their expectations and about making sure that you are interacting in a manner that's positive for everybody. And it's basically the study of people over and over again, because every transaction that I work on, you have a completely different set of players, and you have to spend time to actually get to know the way that each individual works so that you can basically pivot towards that different way that people work. And that is definitely not something that you learn in law school.
Excellent. And would you encourage more girls to think about pursuing a degree and then eventually a law job as well?
You know, it's a law degree can be the basis of a lot of different things. The importance of getting a law degree may differ to depending on the type of career that you really want to pursue eventually. But the main idea really is that focusing on critical thinking and developing those skills will really relate to a lot of different types of careers. That whether you're going into medicine, technology, an industry, whatever it might be, that making sure that you're thinking critically about whatever your job is, whatever your situation is, and understanding the other person's point of view as well, it really helps in terms of growing personally.
Right. I definitely agree with all of that. And now, do you have any other advice that you'd like to give to women, young women and girls that are listening to this show right now?
Well, I would say it's not an easy thing to do, but try to believe in your own choices. And despite the fact that people around you may think that you're taking a path that will ultimately not be as successful as you believe, so long as you are willing to dedicate yourself to making that path work, then you should be satisfied and content in your choices.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And now, do you have any upcoming projects that you'd be excited to share with us? Anything that you're working on right now?
Sure. So, like I said, my firm has really been spending a lot of time in this crowdfunding space. And just generally, we've noticed that the trend is that women-led businesses are obtaining substantially more financing than they have in the past. So my firm has made a commitment to supporting women entrepreneurs, and we are truly seeking out and trying to help women start their businesses, help them focus on the issues and the ideas they may need to address immediately, and helping them create the framework of regulation that is going to be very important to their business on an ongoing basis. So we're really focused on finding women entrepreneurs and making sure that the culture of our firm is such that it's going to be inviting to them as well.
Awesome. It is some great work that you are working on over in New York City. And we know that Women Investing in Women absolutely appreciates you. And it's been an absolute honor to have you on our show today. So thank you so much for being our guest today.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
It was absolutely our pleasure. And we'd like to thank all of our listeners for listening as well. You've been listening to Women Investing in Women and Girls. Remember to go to facebook.com/womeninvesting or on Twitter using the hashtag womeninvest, the hashtag girlsinvest, or the hashtag investinwomen. This show is produced by Kidstar Radio for the Voice America Kids Network. And Kidstar Radio, we empower kids.
Thank you for joining us today. Your hosts will be back next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, for another edition of Women Investing in Women and Girls on the Voice America Kids channel. We'll talk then.
My name is Lindsay Marie from Bookworm. Now from the Kidstar Album of the Month, here is the Whiz Pops and their song, Blue Wave. That was the Whiz Pops from the Kidstar Album of the Month.